Now, while allegations of sexual harassment and assault have been a growing presence in entertainment circles, among others, our guest says we need to take a closer look at the way romance and relationships are portrayed by the entertainment industry. She says when we go back and look at some of our maybe favorite movies, TV shows, and songs, we find often positive portrayals of behavior that would be disturbing, even criminal, in real life. Julie Beck is a senior associate editor at The Atlantic, where she wrote the piece, When Pop Culture Sells Dangerous Myths About Romance. Julie, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Well, I think an experience a lot of people may have had lately is with the Me Too movement going on and all the news we have from all sectors of American culture with sexual harassment and assault, taking another look at popular culture and thinking that stuff that we thought was funny or entertaining or whatever in the past, maybe it was kind of creepy in hindsight. Is that where you're coming from right now?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not a one-to-one comparison, obviously, from fiction to real life, but these things really are entangled together just in the culture that we have around romance and romantic pursuit and sex and all these things. And you can't totally divorce the love stories that we tell ourselves from the way that people act when living their own love stories.
I want to dig into one of the examples that you give, Twilight, a popular romance film about the love between a vampire and a human girl. I want to play a clip here. Edward the vampire has just appeared in Bella, the human's, bedroom unannounced.
How did you get in here?
The window.
Do you do that a lot?
Well, just the past couple of months. I like watching you sleep. It's kind of fascinating to me.
And this, I gather, turns into their first kiss. Talk about this scene and what you see as alarming about it, Julie.
I mean, he likes watching her sleep. It's fine, you know. It's chill. There's nothing weird about that. No, it's just, it's so interesting. I mean, that's one of the more blatant, maybe, examples of somebody crossing a boundary and then them just selling it as romantic. But, I mean, I think these extreme examples, like, do help because then you can kind of see it in the more subtle ways, too, where, like, just intrusiveness is portrayed as tantamount to devotion, and that's not great or accurate.
Right, again and again in the romantic story, the guy, romantic lead, overcomes obstacles to win the love of the woman. Those obstacles may be the woman not being interested in him at all in the first place. Does that send a message about real-life romance?
Yeah, I mean, like, I understand, you know, that they're trying to tell a story, and for a story to work, you need conflict, right? But the conflict is so often, you know, that she says no, or she is in some way indicating that she's not interested, or she's unavailable, and, you know, the man just pursues her anyway. And I think it does, again, I'm, like, hesitant to draw, like, exact comparisons, but I think that when you see these love stories that sort of normalize intrusion and coercion as part of the chase and part of what makes romance romantic, that can make it kind of hard to tell in real life when your boundaries have really been violated and, you know, when you need to be afraid.
And you give a couple other examples. The famous moment in Say Anything back from 1989. Lloyd is romantically out there with his boombox playing Peter Gabriel. And then the character in Love Actually, who goes to his married woman friend's house and is holding up the signs about how he loves her. At first glance, a lot of people are like, "Ah," but you're rethinking those "ahs," Julie.
Yeah, I mean, both of those are, like, basically stalking if you get right down to it. But the thing about Love Actually, or not Love Actually, but Say Anything, that is almost more insidious and interesting to me is this scene at the end when Diane, the heroine, comes to, like, tell him after they've broken up that she wants him, she wants to get back together, she loves him. And he goes, "Oh, are you just here because you need someone, or are you here because you need me?" And it's interesting because up to that point, he hasn't really cared much what she wants. And before she has a chance to answer, he just goes, never mind, I don't care. And then they, you know, kiss. So he almost had a moment of self-improvement and self-realization, but then he immediately negated it.
So the woman doesn't get to be, get to have agency, doesn't get to have her own interests here.
Yeah, at the, I mean, it's a scene where it, from the beginning, it seems like she is expressing her desires and he is kind of, you know, questioning that, like really caring what her answer to this question is, but then he, forget it, I don't care.
Talking to Julie Beck from The Atlantic about pop culture and how it portrays romance and where it blurs sometimes into stalking, sexual harassment, and worse. And let's get into that and worse, Julie. One of the most famous weddings on TV of my childhood was Luke and Laura on the TV show, the soap opera General Hospital. That all started with an unambiguous rape scene, right?
Yeah, it did. And it was pretty crazy looking that up when I was writing this piece because I, you know, I wasn't alive then, so I didn't really follow that show. But, yeah, it's about the most extreme example of it you can get. He literally rapes her, and then the show kind of retcons that to turn it into a romance. And something I read, you know, said that the show began to frame the incident as a seduction. And you can watch the scene. It's on YouTube. It's really not.
Have you seen that? You also point toward a scene in Buffy the Vampire Slayer where Spike, the ultimately, spoiler alert, reformed vampire, again, there's a rape scene attempted that leads into a relationship later, an awkward one, but a relationship.
Yeah, so not exactly. You know, they kind of had a relationship going before that, and then he tries to rape her. He leaves. He comes back, and they don't get back together romantically, but they do resume, like, a very close friendship. And the show kind of just never speaks of it again.
I want to turn to comedy a little bit. You didn't spend as much time on this in the pieces you've written, but if you think about How I Met Your Mother, the character of Barney, or going back, Night Court, the John Larroquette character, again and again in shows, there's the sexual harassing guy. It's played for laughs. If the show goes on long enough, they get a sympathetic side. You're pulling for them in a relationship. Do you have thoughts on how that comes through in a lot of situation comedies?
Yeah, that's like a slightly different and interesting thing. I feel like a lot of times the guy is sort of portrayed as like a bit of a sad sack, and he's pining for this girl, and then you like feel bad for him and you want them to get together. But the girl has very clearly said she's not interested. But the way the show frames it is like, oh, isn't it so sad? She doesn't like him. Eventually he'll win her over. And there's sort of this idea of wearing someone down. You know, there's in Parks and Rec, the Aziz Ansari character, Tom Haverford, at one point asks this woman out over and over and over again, and she finally agrees to go out with him. And he literally says something like, the best words in the English language, you wore me down. And then I don't care much for that either.
I want to turn to music now. You give an example, examples from different genres with some sometimes creepy ideas of romance. Here's a listen to a mashup of a few of the songs that you talk about. Let's start with the first and third ones there. If you say no, can I change your mind? And Blurred Lines got a lot of attention, not all of it good, by Robin Thicke there. So talk about the messages of these catchy songs.
Yeah, I mean, it's a similar message. It's a little different with music because it's not exactly like a narrative story like sometimes it is, but more often it's, you know, not really like a full plot that you're following, like an actual relationship. But it does, so many of our songs are love songs, and when you have that kind of, like, I know you want it, like, that sort of language, it gets in your head like an earworm, you know? And you kind of, especially a lot of these songs are sung by men and, you know, presumably toward women, and it just reinforces a lot of the things that we've already talked about.
Talking to Julie Beck, senior associate editor at The Atlantic, covering health and psychology there. We're talking about her piece, When Pop Culture Sells Dangerous Myths About Romance. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Have you seen what our guest is talking about when you go back and look at TV shows, movies, song lyrics? Do you see stuff we might have seen as romantic at one point or funny in the case of a comedy that when you look back on it seems kind of creepy, entering into stalking or sexual harassment or even assault territory? Did you grow up watching TV or movies that affected the way you thought about love and relationships in your own life? Is it worth taking a closer look at these messages, especially with the Me Too movement that we've been having over the last year? Call in now, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll pick up the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Julie Beck is our guest, senior associate editor at The Atlantic. She wrote in a recent piece that music, TV, and movies often in some way glorify predatory male behavior by portraying it as romantic. Do any shows, songs, or movies come to your mind as we're talking? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And how has the portrayal of romance in pop culture affected your life, either maybe when you were a teenager or on into whatever age you are now? You can tweet us at Central Time WPR or call in at 800-642-1234. To your calls now, Denise is with us in Viroqua. Denise, hi.
Hey, thanks. 2 points I wanted to ask your guest about is the problematic nature of women singing songs like Pat Benatar's How Many Times Have I Partied With That Song, Hit Me With Your Best Shot, or most recently Katy Perry's song, I think it's called Alien, where she says, I want to be your victim. Can your guest speak to that?
Denise, thanks for the call. I knew the one song. I didn't know the Katy Perry one, I'll admit. Any thoughts, Julie?
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting to see, like, the different ways these ideas can creep into people's minds. And I think, like, I don't want to be totally heteronormative about it, but I think a lot of it is, you know, men pursuing women and then how women feel about being pursued. And it's so hard to disentangle your own desires from the things that you were kind of taught to want by your culture and your environment. And that's what that makes me think of.
Thanks a lot for the call, Denise. We'll go next to Becky in Nisita. Becky, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to bring up, you know, there's the Christmas song, Baby, It's Cold Outside. And the more I've listened to it over the years and learned the lyrics, the more I feel like that should not be a song anybody should be singing. Talking about, well, what's in your drink? Baby, just drink it, you know?
Becky, thanks. And Julie, that is a song that, in hindsight, you know, it's nice and peppy sounding and stuff. Looking at the lyrics, it's kind of disturbing.
Oh, yeah. Every Christmas season, it gets trotted out once again, and then we talk about it once again. Yeah, it's not great. I think that was one that I referenced as well. I think even before the debate that we're having now, people had kind of more recently figured out that one was a bit rough.
Becky, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll go next to Steve on the line in Danbury. Steve, hi.
Hi. I've always loved the Beatles, but Run for Your Life kind of creeps me out a little in this regard. Run for Your Life, can little girl, hide your head in the sand, little girl. Catch you with another man, that's the end, little girl.
Steve, thanks for bringing that up. And Julie, that's a whole other theme that you didn't get into, songs that basically maybe glorify domestic violence. I mean, I think of Hey Joe, where you're going with a gun in your hand, like violence, domestic violence basically as the main theme of songs like the one Steve brought up and others.
Yeah, and that's a really powerful example. And for me, when I was young, I was really into emo music, and a lot of those songs are very similar. You know, there's a lot of revenge fantasies in those songs, a lot of just aggression in the lyrics, and a lot of also, you know, hiding in the closet and watching people and then, like, you know, wishing violence on them when they don't reciprocate your romantic feelings. So that's definitely another theme that runs through a lot of our culture.
With all the stuff, Julie, coming out in the Me Too movement, focusing on the entertainment industry, I mean, we're finding that a lot of people who were producing, directing, writing these things were engaged in behavior ranged from creepy to criminal. I mean, do you think that the real life behavior of people was informing what was coming out in their pop culture creations?
I mean, I can't, you know, these things are so complicated. There's no way to say, like, of course, you know, because they had such and such theme in their work and then such and such accusation against them that those things are directly related. But at the same time, on a macro level, like, I don't think it's a coincidence. You know, both of these things have been shaped by the culture that we all live in. So it's not an exclusive to the entertainment industry. But it is interesting to think about these parallels and the way that a lot of this behavior, while it may have been covered up behind the scenes in the industry itself, you know, the products that the industry was making a pretty blatant point about, you know, what it valued.
Talking to Julie Beck, senior associate editor at The Atlantic, about pop culture and how it portrays romance and blurs sometimes into sexual harassment and worse. Back to your calls. Shauna is on the line in Milwaukee. Shauna, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My thought about a lot of this is, for a long time, I've always felt like the Baby It's Cold Outside or all of these different songs and movies that you're discussing are creepy or strange to me, and yet a lot of the people around me don't see it that way. Either they grew up with it or they don't think about it deeper or they just don't follow the logic through on, oh, wait, that's kind of talking about rape or assault or something along those lines. So I'm really glad that, to an extent at least, the people are beginning to think about this, because for a long time I've said that a lot of this is weird and creepy, and it's always been like, no, I think you're just reading into it too much.
Shauna, thanks for the call. Julie, what do you say to Shauna?
You know, I think I think she's completely right. Some of this stuff is so on the surface that it is a little bit bananas that people didn't comment on it earlier. And, like, obviously, you know, some people did notice, but there are so many subtle ways that these ideas manifest themselves in our lives. And it's just, it's crazy to think about how many of them are not that subtle at all. They're pretty on the surface, and yet we don't always notice them or we see through them.
It's kind of the pop culture water we swim in. It's hard to be aware of it.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Thanks, Shauna, for that call. Want to get to one more caller. We've got Beruv on the line in Los Angeles. Beruv, hi.
Yes, sir. So I'm standing here by the incinerator, throwing away all of my Shakespeare, Greek tragedies, Raymond Chandler, Dashiell Hammett, Casablanca, full of really bad behavior.
Beruv, thanks for the call. So, Julie, you're not calling on us to throw away all of these pop culture artifacts, are you?
I mean, no, I'm not the boss of your pop culture. The point that he's maybe not, I don't know if he's intending to make, but, like, that it's, I'm hearing, is that these tropes have been around for a really, really long time, and it is going to be difficult to disentangle them from the stories that we tell. It doesn't mean that there's no value to be found in these stories, but I think it does bear critical thinking about them, as it does with any art that we consume and enjoy.
Do you think we're going to get better at engaging with our pop culture more critically and thinking about these issues as they're portrayed?
I hope so, and I think people are having these conversations now, and I think that a lot of I think that when we have more culture made by women, that gets attention and is prominent. I'm thinking, for example, about Lady Bird and some of these movies by women directors that have been coming out. And you, not to say that that's the solution, but I think it's a part of the solution, especially when you can just see them coming at it from such a different perspective than the one that you see most of the time.
And are there other positive examples that you see out there, maybe in our recent pop culture, that you think, yeah, I they're getting it more right?
You know, I should have had a list that I came ready with, because people have been asking me that. It's really hard off the top of my head to say, you know, these shows are doing it right and these shows are doing it wrong. But I do think that there's an awareness of it in more recent TV and movies and books that maybe wasn't present even 10 years ago. And I think that is an encouraging sign.
Julie, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Julie Beck, Senior Associate Editor at The Atlantic, where she covers health and psychology. She joins us to talk about her piece, When Pop Culture Sells Dangerous Myths About Romance.